Ryan Stanton here with ASAP Frontline. Joined today at ASAP 17 with Asia Liferidge, Dr. Asia Liferidge, somebody that we've talked to before, I think, at Leadership and Advocacy Conference, talking about this push with the American College of Emergency Physicians, honestly, medicine in general, and across the board, which is diversity and inclusion. We all make better decisions when we have different viewpoints and angles to come from. And Dr. Liferidge is an assistant professor of emergency medicine at George Washington University right here in Washington, D.C., honestly, where I'm staying, not at the hospital, but at one of the hotels that's right there beside the place. And we wanted to talk today. We've talked before about some of the diversity and inclusion, but we also have, and you're speaking for today, on behalf of the Diversity and Inclusion Task Force. Another thing to add that is new and different is that from the council, in the spirit of honestly really changing up that photo that we have is the you were elected to the board here at council, and probably one of the more diverse panels that I've seen, and with Dr. Allison Haddock and yourself added to the board as well, along with the two incumbents that were brought back to the board. And so, you know, adding some very good and new perspective that will help us be a stronger college. And so let's talk about what has changed, what is different than when we talked about 6 months ago, actually more along the lines about 7 months ago, here in Washington, D.C.
Well, thank you so much, Ryan. I really appreciate the opportunity to chat again. So really, the Diversity and Inclusion Task Force has been really, really busy. Over the past 14 months, we have collectively worked on three different objectives. Objective one speaks to engaging emergency medicine around diversity and inclusion. Objective two speaks to identifying barriers to D&I and also solutions. And then the final objective speaks to correlating disparities in healthcare and patient outcomes with D&I. And under each of those objectives, we've assigned about 22 different tactics. And I'm really proud to say that over the 14-month period, we've accomplished about 90% of those tactics. We took on a pretty ambitious agenda, knowing that this was a really important initiative for the college. You know, the college is actually ahead of most specialties when it comes down to diversity and inclusion in this initiative. And so we're really leading the way as a college. And so we wanted to do a really good job. Over the course of those 14 months, we have had the fortunate opportunity to create some pretty big products, actually. One is an online course around unconscious bias. So we know that unconscious bias as well as diversity and inclusion are related. We know that we all have unconscious bias. It's ubiquitous. It is what it is. It's present. It's not really a bad thing. It's something to be aware of so that we can ameliorate the negative effects of it. And so what we did was put together a three-part online course that is CME eligible, and it's really, really sharp. I cannot wait for it to be released. I really like it a lot. Should be released maybe in the next month or so. And it really speaks to, again, kind of what unconscious bias is, how it relates to D&I, how it relates to disparities in healthcare. And then how unconscious bias specifically affects our practice as far as being able to take care of patients most effectively and ensure the best outcomes based on real data. There's plenty of data that connects the two. And then finally, it speaks to strategy as far as, again, ameliorating the effects of unconscious bias. So that's one big kind of product that we've created and we're really proud of. And we're hoping that all of the college can take advantage of that tool. Another product has to do with a college-wide survey that was completed using help from our friends at AAMC. This college-wide survey on diversity and inclusion actually had a really good response rate for us, and it allowed us to obtain some really good data around demographics, for one, in the college, because what we realize is that the demographic collection in ASAP is not very accurate or complete or helpful. And so first we're fixing that issue in terms of making sure we have really accurate demographic data. And then it also speaks to individuals' experiences around diversity and inclusion and ideas with regard to barriers and solutions. So those are two big products that have kind of come out of the work of the task force thus far. Along the way, we've done lots of surveys to see what other specialties are doing, to see what other emergency medicine organizations are doing. And also, in addition to that, we were able to propose and get passed a new council award around D&I. So they're starting in 2018 will be a new council champion of diversity and inclusion award given in San Diego next year in 2018.
Let's step back just a little bit and define what is meant in terms of the goal of the diversity and inclusion. Because I think, speaking of bias, I think we all have a lot of biases when it comes to the process of diversity through the last number of decades. And then really, more importantly, what it means to us as a college, as a profession, and what it means to our patients. I mean, you talk about unconscious bias, meaning that we're not consciously thinking about it clearly when we walk into that room, but we all kind of set that in there. And since our conversation we had, which in many ways was on that unconscious bias back in March, I think about it going in there on what are the things that I do when I walk into the room, trying to be more cognizant of it. What do I do when I walk in that room that may inadvertently run the potential of harming that patient because I've already got these thoughts and ideas when I walk into that room? And clearly we can't completely flush or wash those thoughts or biases, but we can be aware of them and learn how to address them and be aware of them and not bring them into our emergency departments to where it impacts. Because in many ways, those unconscious biases are things that have been developed and built over upbringing based on your family situation, where you were raised, the environments of which you were raised, the experiences you had growing up. And so those are there, and we're not trying to completely reprogram the way people are. It's just understanding it and figuring out how to not have that as a factor in the care that you're providing to your patients and the way you interact with other professionals.
Absolutely. So it's really a journey, and I think it starts with what you just said, and that is awareness. I think that we have accomplished a tremendous amount outside of any development of a single tangible product just because we're talking about it more. And there is obviously increased awareness about the topic throughout the college, and hopefully that will spread throughout the House of Medicine and obviously trickle down to our patients. What we know is that diversity is important because it creates an enrichment of environment. It creates that diversity in terms of thought and experience to bring together the most efficient and effective model for success. You know, our colleagues in the business sector figured it out years ago that diversity in terms of their business, in terms of their employees, in terms of their board members made a significant difference in terms of their finances, their success, their image and perception to clients, etc. And certainly it applies to medicine as well, not just from a financial standpoint, not just from the standpoint that the college is in fact an organization that does administrative work, but certainly from the standpoint of being able to provide the best patient care possible. Again, we know that there is a definite connection between healthcare disparities and lack of diversity. The most compelling argument speaks to the importance of congruence between provider and patient with regard to diversity. So countless studies have shown that patients feel generally more satisfied when they're taken care of by a practitioner that resembles themselves. And it's not about prejudice or anything like that. It's human nature. I would say that largely all of us have some of that. And what is shown is not just feeling more comfortable and satisfied, but then they are more likely to be compliant and to have better patient outcomes and to live longer. And that's really what it's all about. We know that about 84,000 lives are lost every single year around disparities in healthcare. And so this topic is extremely important, really, from the standpoint of why we chose to go to medicine in the first place, and that's to provide the best care possible for all of our patients. I'd just say, in terms of the unconscious bias that you mentioned, I tend to think of diversity in two kind of buckets. One is around bias and unconscious bias, which is a big piece, as you alluded to. And I just say that as emergency docs, we are specifically at risk for unconscious bias because we're working fast. We're using the fast side of our brain and not the slow side of our brain. And that is a huge risk factor for bias. And so we, perhaps more than other specialties, in fact, need to be really aware of it. And then the other pot of diversity that I think about is just really from provider diversity and member diversity, in terms of making sure that we all don't look the same and don't come to the table with the same thoughts.
One thing I love about our council is that you assume, when you hear physician or see physician, you assume it's pretty conservative crowd. But, you know, if you look at our council, it's straight up 50-50, you know, in terms of which aisle. So it makes for great discussions and input. And in most cases, in vast majority of times, it's very collegial. On occasion, it gets a little bit darty. But if you look at the advances that have happened through IMRA, very much reflecting much more diversity, whether it's ethnicity, whether it's sex, whether it's whatnot, you know, even the board and its members much more represent what we're seeing through our medical schools and through our residencies now, a much more diverse population. So it's, you know, I think that movement is taking place, and as practice, whereas medicine used to be, you know, much thanks to the imagery of those like Norman Rockwell, that old white guy with the glasses on the end of his nose type of career, and that's simply not the case. But, you know, I can't change where I came from. So, you know, when I walk into that room with, we'll just say, a Muslim female, and so Caucasian male, it's the card I was dealt. How do I connect? Because you mentioned it, you know, we all kind of want to have like. I mean, if you honestly look at your face page lineup, you tend to collect folks that say the same things you say, that feel the same way things you say, that look the same way you do in many cases. And that's one issue I have with social media, is a lot of times folks tend to block those that actually have alternate ideas than you. And honestly, it can be frustrating, but you can ignore them. But many times you'll find something that challenges something you feel or think or see. And if you actually dig into it, can you, under the evidence, support the way you feel, or do you need to look at other ideas and thoughts and approaches to things? But when it comes rolling back around to that bias standpoint of thing, and that patient that's sitting there that would prefer to have a like ethnicity female for their pelvic related complaint when they come to the emergency room, but unfortunately when we're there in the ER, you know, I may be the provider that you're dealt. And how do we help to alleviate those fears and preferences in order to get them the best outcomes, get them the best information, the best diagnosis, and the best compliance with the treatments that we're going to provide to them?
Sure. So I think a big solution to what you're describing speaks to just exposure in the first place. I think the more you're around individuals that aren't like you, the more comfortable we're all gonna be with each other, because what it does is it forces you to realize that, in fact, we're far more alike than we are different. And so whether it be someone of a different religious background or a different ethnic background or a different gender or a different even sexual orientation, to just force ourselves to be exposed and a little bit out of our comfort zone, a little bit uncomfortable, perhaps momentarily, with individuals with whom we're not traditionally around or talking to learn and educate ourselves on the perspective from which they're coming. And certainly it'll be likely a bi-directional relationship wherein they learn from you, you learn from them. And again, you just realize that at the end of the day, we all have the basic same expectation and desire out of life. That's to be happy, to be healthy, to have our families, and to kind of just take one day at a time. And so I think that those forced exposures in some instances will result in, over time, increased increased comfort and decreased bias, right? Because you educate yourself on the truth. So I think that's one way to do it. In terms of the provider-physician relationship, I think first it's really important for us to recognize that we are in a place of power, really. Or at least that's how our patients view us, as the authority, we're the doctor, we're treating them, in some instances, perhaps helping save their life. So lots of power there. And the truth is it comes with privilege as well. And we have to just recognize that. So I think approaching each patient with humility helps. So, and being honest and saying that, hey, I know I don't look like you. I know this may be a little weird and uncomfortable, but trust me when I say I have your very best interest at heart. I'm here to make you as comfortable as possible. And, you know, thank you for giving me the opportunity even to being exposed to something different and to learning from you.
One of the big things I think we need to be aware of is some of the cultural sensitivities, especially living in the United States, which is a melting pot, despite a lot of the, the hubbub that's gone around the last number of months in terms of walls and whatever things are out there. But, we are a melting pot, and we have a lot of folks that visit the United States. We have a lot of folks that immigrate to the United States. We have a diverse. I mean, that's one thing I love about here in Washington, D.C., is I can, enjoy truly wonderful ethnic food from different populations that are the way it's supposed to be, and enjoy kind of the diversity that's from around the world. And when patients come to the emergency room, I think it's very important to understand and to recognize some of those sensitivities. So I mentioned the Muslim female, in the culture. There's a lot of times I've seen care that's been refused because the absolute refusal to have a male physician or PA or nurse practitioner, whoever it is, to see them in a vulnerable position like that. And so understanding that and talking with them about those concerns, about the options, about what we can or can't do, and meeting them. And it may have been, something I've heard within the last couple of days, meeting them where they are. Not trying to make everybody conform to the way we are and the way we see the world and our particular thoughts on practice, but also trying to understand a little bit further where they are and where they come from and those natural apprehensions and fears that they have, because just as we will have biases, unconscious or conscious, they also, with their upbringing and where they're from and their cultures and things, will also guide a lot of that as well. And if we kind of work together and maybe knock off that whole power position, I mean, the whole idea of us sitting down when we walk into a room is to kind of lower that power position and be on the level with the patients where we're seeing them eye to eye as opposed to looking down and them looking up. That's just a simple step, but understanding where people come from, where they are, and the things that are making that trip difficult. Emergencies are difficult in general. They're in a difficult position, they're in a difficult situation, and then you throw into there these things, especially if they're like last week had somebody who was just visiting the United States on vacation the first time, and they end up in one of our emergency departments, don't understand the system, don't understand how it all works, and being able to sit there and try and start to explain and alleviate fears and let them know that we're there to take care of them, that we're not going to have any type of issue or concern, that they're not local or whatnot, it goes a long way.
Absolutely, it does. In fact, this year at Council, there were a couple resolutions that spoke to the idea of safe harbors, if you will, for patients of other ethnicities and internationalities coming into the emergency department. But I'd say, so it's certainly being discussed. I think that's half the battle. I would say that the far majority of us mean well. We want to provide the best care possible to our patients. We want to be doctors who are effective. And we know that effective medicine requires compassion, and it requires being able to communicate effectively. It requires being patient. It requires also the book sense and the competence from a clinical capacity, but it really requires a well-rounded person who is, has some emotional intelligence and is able to relate to generally people in general. But hey, none of us are born with a handbook around cultural sensitivity, cultural competence, or unconscious bias. In fact, you know, the phrase unconscious bias has become super popular in the past 5 years or so, but I can't recall hearing it discussed a ton, you know, a couple decades ago. And so I think the reality is that needing formal, sometimes, assistance in these areas to improve our performance is not a bad thing. In fact, it's a great thing to be aware of that and to be conscientious enough to reach out for help when you need to be conscientious enough to seek out the online course that I mentioned that's going to be available to all members of ASEP via the web on unconscious bias and cultural competence.
I believe we have a unique position in emergency medicine to be that bridge of maturity and advancement and progressive nature of the human condition rather than whatever qualifier you want to throw on it. Because so many folks that we see in emergency medicine, many of our patients, and even providers for that standpoint, but many times the patients, you know, they're in difficult situations where they're dealing with a lot of this, you know, hate and angst and biased and discriminatory practices and things like that. And we have the opportunity in our departments to treat humans as humans, to treat, you know, to honestly, the golden rule, to treat others as you would want to be treated and to rise above and to say, you know, and I've outright apologized to patients before that are difficult situations and have been treated poorly and say, look, I'm sorry that not every Caucasian is an a-hole. And, you know, I apologize for what's been done, but what I'm here to do right now is to treat you as a human being as well as I would treat my wife and children and anybody in my family. And I think that does a huge thing. And, you know, what I see from all of these things with the diversity and inclusion is just honestly getting the viewpoints that are different, that may be different, that from seeing world from a different view, but also what we should all be doing, which is just treating each other with respect and as human beings without these conscious or unconscious biases that we put up with associated with sex and with color, with background, with socioeconomic status, whatever silly-ass little criteria we use to try to separate each other, that really, in the end, should be used for progression and positive growth and not for what we tend to have done, and especially in our history, which is an ability to separate and demean and degrade and to lower or raise a certain population.
Yep, you nailed it. You nailed it on the head for sure, Ryan. So you saying you're sorry, apologizing, which definitely goes a very long way, I would say. I mean, it would go a long way if you felt somehow demeaned or harmed. Everyone appreciates being told that someone cares, that their feelings were hurt. And so I think that definitely goes a long way, and it shows humility. And I would say that even for individuals who haven't yet evolved to the point where there is that degree of selflessness and emotional intelligence and maturity to be able to just want to treat people right for the sake of treating them right, there are other reasons actually that will hopefully be compelling, and that speaks to quality actually. And so in an age where we're moving away from fee-for-service, more towards quality, value, care, the reality is that we're going to be more and more evaluated based on the quality that we provide to patients. And that quality needs to be not so much patient-centered, as you alluded to, but more person-centered, right? And so we talk a lot about patient-centered, but there's this movement towards more person-centered care that is outside of just the clinical arena of that particular patient in the ED with dysuria, for example, but rather what's going on at home with that patient, what is the patient's culture, how do all of those influence their presentation clinically in the emergency department, and taking all of those pieces into account, social determinants of health, et cetera, is what then allows us to provide the best quality possible. ASAP's doing a wonderful job by having created CEDAR, our new registry, which will give us a great opportunity to actually measure these things quality-wise as far as having measures for disparities, et cetera, a part of CEDAR. And so all around, this topic is really overarching and cross-cutting in various ways, and so I'm really just happy that the college has taken it on as an initiative and that we're trailblazing on the topic.
Dr. Asia Liferidge, Assistant Professor of Emergency Medicine, George Washington University, newly elected board member for the American College of Emergency Physicians, but today speaking with us and second visit with us on behalf of the Diversity and Inclusion Task Force, moving emergency practice in our college forward. How can folks get in touch with you either via the email or the social web?
Absolutely. So I can be reached at alifridge@asep.org. That's A-L-I-F as in Frank, E-R-I-D-G-E at asep.org. I can also be reached on the website, and I'm happy to talk with anyone at any time about this and any other topic affecting our beloved college. And thank you so much, Ryan, for the opportunity. It's always a pleasure.
Of course, and always wonderful conversations. As for me, you can contact me, youreverydaymedicine@gmail.com or at everydaymed on the Twitter. And make sure that you're subscribed to our podcast, either via SoundCloud or iTunes, whichever you prefer. And then we love your comments and suggestions. And until next time, I'm Dr. Ryan Stanton, and this has been some ASAP Frontline.